right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there, good evening. Firstly, big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, October 30th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7, Bernard Jackman and Justin Tracy join us live from Chicago, and we'll hear from Ireland head coach Andy Farrell as he reveals his team for Saturday's Soldier Field showdown against New Zealand. We have a motorsports special coming up in the company of the legendary David Kennedy and current star Alex Denning. And as is tradition of a Thursday, Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America. As always, you can get in touch by texting 51552 or message us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Yes, hello there, good evening. It is great to have your company here on 2FM. Welcome along to the show. Lots to get through between now and 7 o'clock. But there is only one place to begin, and that is with the big rugby news. Andy Farrell has revealed his starting 15 and indeed matchday squad for Saturday's Soldier Field showdown. And there for us is Justin Tracy, who joins us on the line now. Justin, some big calls made by Andy Farrell.
Certainly have been, Shane. Good evening to you. Yeah, it's an exciting looking team. Like, Jack Crowley was fully expected to come in after that performance against Leinster, so no real surprises at all there. And Mac Hansen's injury has left the door open for Tommy O'Brien. O'Brien's is a great story. He obviously was capturing the summer in those games against Georgia and Portugal, but this is the big time. And Farrell certainly acknowledged that it's huge for O'Brien, somebody who's suffered terribly with injuries over his career. He's 27 now, so he's a latecomer, but because he has that injection of pace that Ireland so badly need, it's a welcome selection for Andy Farrell, to be perfectly honest. Outside of that, I suppose, Shane, Stuart McCloskey gets his chance too, as do Ryan Baird, two men who don't start too many tests for Ireland, but the feeling is both are fully deserving in how they've been going of late.
We will hear from Andy Farrell very shortly. What was his demeanour? Excited to be back with the Ireland, in the Ireland team and the Ireland environment after a spell with the Lions?
He certainly was. Shane, he said he was loving life, and he certainly looked like a man fully at ease. You know, he was in great form, chatting away with everyone before and after the press conference. There was no sense of pressure here. He just... So it's almost a Farrell mantra that, you know, we're in this privileged position that we get to do what we do. And he's looking at this very much as, yeah, it's a huge bonus if they come out and manage to win this game. But he wants to really assess where they're at. And I suppose 2 years out from the World Cup, it's now a question of guys putting their hands up and really making a case for Ireland campaigns, not just this one, but into the Six Nations and on after that. And that was very much what he was stressing in this. You know, the idea that in some way Ireland are undercooked, or there's a lot of lads coming in here who haven't played a lot of matches. He just wasn't having that at all. He was just saying, look, I don't believe in that. I think you get out there, you rise to these occasions, and how you do that is you have to be mentally prepared. He said physically, it normally follows.
Before we let you go, Justin, is there much buzz about... I'm aware it's a couple of days out from the match itself. I saw the Ireland squad were at the Bulls NBA basketball matches. Like, are we expecting a sold-out stadium?
I think so. I haven't got a definitive. I can't confirm that to you, but I'd be very surprised if it isn't sold out. Bernard might have more on that, but certainly there are loads of Irish already around, coming in yesterday. Plenty of Irish on the plane, and you can see and hear the Irish faces and voices right around the city centre here. And obviously the colour is already out. So yeah, there's plenty of buzz. The Ireland team have been having a great time. I think it was primarily because they haven't had that much match practice. They wanted to get a couple of really strong training reps in, and that's why they came out a little bit earlier. But yeah, they love Chicago. Lots of good memories from 9 years ago. And yeah, I think they're raring to go for Saturday.
Okay, great stuff. Justin Tracy, thank you so much for checking in with us. Before we chat to Bernie Jacklin, let's hear from Ireland head coach Andy Farrell now. Justin outlined the big calls on Tommy O'Brien, Stuart McCluskey and Jack Crowley. And that's what Andy Farrell was speaking about.
He deserves it. He's had a great pre-season, come back in the start of the season in good form, and it's certainly something that we saw in the first week over here. So we've had a great camp, getting the lads back together. It certainly shows us where everyone's at as far as the competition and the respect that they're trying to gain from one another. So you watch all of that and you come up with a decision who deserves to start, and rightly so. Jack has been running the side really well this week, so we're looking forward to seeing him perform.
Tommy O'Brien, a huge day for him and his family. Yeah. Obviously, he's played during the summer, but this is a huge, huge start for him.
No, it's huge, and we obviously know his capabilities, and he's had a bit of a stop-start career with injuries, etc. But once he gets his body right, he's some athlete, and not just that. I've been super impressed of how diligent he is in his preparation. It's a big game, obviously, for him. Obviously, you mentioned that he got captain in the summer, but this is a huge game for everyone. Never mind a guy playing the All Blacks for the first time at the start of the season. But I don't get a sense of the occasion is gonna be too big for him, because he's so professional in how he goes about his job. So he's prepared really well, and really looking forward to seeing how he goes.
Selection of Stewart, what was the thinking there?
He deserves it. The amount of times that I have had conversations with Stu about how well he's been playing, and you know, he just needs to be patient, and he's been unbelievably patient. I mean, some of the amount of times that Stu had been playing well, and the other guys have been on top form and had the shirt, had hold of the shirt, and Stu would be, you know, going back up the road to Belfast on Wednesday. I can't count how many times we've had those type of conversations, but he thoroughly deserves his chance this weekend, because again, from the conversations that I've had, from things that I've seen during pre-season, where he's at, he's upped his game, certainly in the leadership role there, and that has spilled over into the few performances that he's had so far. So he thoroughly deserves his chance.
Andy Farrell speaking at the team announcement there. Bernard Jackman joins us on the line now. Bernard, a lot to unpack from that match day 23. Firstly, how heartening is it to see Andy Farrell reward form in picking Jack Crowley?
Yeah, no, I think there was very little choice, really. Crowley has just had such a big start to the season, and obviously Leinster haven't been as impressive as they normally are, and Sam Prendergast has probably suffered from that, but I think it's the right call. McCluskey probably is a bit of a surprise, but to be fair, you just heard Andy Farrell speak there, and I would agree with him. I think at times, actually, McCluskey's form has maybe been better than Gary Ringrose, Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw in terms of provincial form, but the other three have kind of rotated and McCluskey's lost out, but he's a good operator. He's part of an Ulster team who've had a very good start to the season, and he will relish this opportunity. Obviously Bundy Aki got a knock a couple of weeks ago, and that probably limited his preparation, but he's fit to be on the bench, and Robbie Henshaw is the one who loses out. I would echo what Andy said about Tommy O'Brien. Tommy O'Brien is a class player, and he would have got capped for Ireland 4 or 5 years ago, only for injury. He's someone that Leinster players have always spoken really highly about, but hasn't got a chance to get a run of games, and now he gets it at the highest level. So it's the other interesting one from a selection point of view was, I thought Dan Sheehan being made captain was a little bit left field when Ty Byrne was going to start, but it is a sign of how highly I think Farrell rates Dan Sheehan, and Ty Byrne will lead as well without being officially the captain, and obviously Doris will be fit to come on in the second half. But you know, the Irish team is all well and good, but we've just seen the All Blacks team announced a little over a couple of hours ago, and it's actually a very, very strong side, and it's a big test for Ireland. Playing the All Blacks is always a massive test, but playing the All Blacks with such little game time is a huge ask, and it's going to be fascinating to see what Farrell can get out of this team.
Yeah, just on the New Zealand team, for those who may have missed it. So New Zealand coach Scott Robertson has made four changes to the side for this weekend. But Leinster-bound Rico Ione has been left out of the matchday squad. The versatile back who has been the arch-villain in each of the last two meetings of these teams was among the replacements for the final round of the Rugby Championship, but has failed to make the cut. Eaton de Groot returns from concussion to replace Tamati Williams at loosehead prop, joining Cody Taylor and Fletcher Newell in the front row. The two other changes come in the back line, with Bowden Barrett coming in at out half for Damien McKenzie. Kenzie, with Caleb Clark starts in place of Lester Fainga Anaku, who drops to the bench. What are the main threats from this New Zealand team that we should be wary of, Bernard?
Look, they're missing a couple of players. They're missing three players that will hurt them. Terrell Lomax, the tight head, Patrick Tupilotu and Tupou Vai, second row. So they're a little bit weaker in terms of their ability to for a second rows to be top end over the course of 80 minutes. But they have Ardie Sevilla and they have Bowden Barrett, two World Player of the Year, still playing at a very high level. We know what Jordy Barrett can do from obviously his time at Leinster. Caleb Clark, who actually Tommy O'Brien is up against, is a very good finisher and a very powerful athlete. So that'll be a blockbuster clash between both of them, because both of them are as hard as nails. But the one, I suppose, that's probably going to cause Andy Farrell or Simon Easterby, Ireland's defence coach, probably the most stress is the nine, Cam Rygaard. So he's the replacement to Aaron Smith. He's been exceptional. He gives the All Blacks unbelievable tempo. He's a threat as a runner himself. And he looks like he could be a superstar. So, but there is inexperience in it. Ardie Sevilla's back row partner, Simon Parker, only has five caps, and Peter Lackey only has five as well. So in some ways you see Scott Robertson using this November series as a chance to bring new blood through for the World Cup. But around that, there's plenty of experience. Will Jordan obviously has given Ireland massive problems. He's a 50 capper now and record try scorer for New Zealand. So it's anonymous. It's a very difficult game, given the fact that New Zealand only came second in the Rugby Championship on the base of points difference, and probably they lost to Argentina for the first time in a long time. But it was probably a bad 20 minutes against South Africa that cost them in Wellington. But overall, their form has been pretty decent.
A couple of coaches stepping away. Is Scott Robertson under a bit of pressure?
Yeah, he is a little bit. There's definitely murmurings of discontent or a lack of everyone being on the same page. Jason Holland, the former Munster player, has decided to step away. They haven't announced who's going to replace him yet. Plenty of names that we would know about in Irish rugby who are being linked with that. But you'd imagine he needs a good November. He needs a good November because, unfortunately for him, there's still the fact and the murmurings in New Zealand. When New Zealand lost to Ireland in a test series the year before the World Cup, and Ian Foster was under massive pressure, the senior player in group, you know, who's a lot of them who'd worked with Robertson basically backed Foster. So he has an unbelievable CV, but he's yet to prove that he's a test winning coach at the highest level consistently, which the All Blacks demand. And the problem for him as well is there's a guy called Jamie Joseph who's coaching the All Black 15 this November, who is an ex-All Black who has been there, done that with Japan, and he's kind of lurking in the shadows a little bit. So Robertson certainly will be conscious of the need to get results this November.
From an Irish point of view, the narrative was, oh, this team is undercooked going into such a big match. Now the team being announced and in certain quarters, it's a fresh team. So it's swung already in the space of, what, a few hours. Where do you stand on this?
Well, look, I think Tommy O'Brien and Jamie Osborne are probably in because Mac Hansen and Hugh Keenan are out. McCluskey's a very experienced player. So he's been someone, he hasn't started a huge amount of test match for Ireland, but he's always been part of the squad. The bolter, I suppose, is Paddy McCarthy, who's going to make his debut, Joe McCarthy's brother. A great occasion for him to get his first test cap against the All Blacks in Chicago. He's got ahead of Jack Boyle, but in general it's tried and tested. In fairness to Ian Henderson and Stuart McCluskey, probably a lot of people were writing them off coming into the season, but their form for Ulster has demanded that they get an opportunity, and they won't be found wanting. Yeah, but there is a nice freshness to it. A couple of new names, new faces, and obviously with an A game in November as well, it's a further chance for Farrell to see what depth he has. I think the fact they've gone to Chicago for 10 days is massive. I think touring is something that Farrell loves. Players love being away this last 10 days in Chicago, and the build up to this, they've left no stone unturned. They couldn't control the game time they had because obviously the Lions tour, but they've certainly given every possible avenue to get a good performance on Saturday.
Big call naming Paddy McCarthy on the bench. How important is the bench going to be overall for Ireland? I'm looking at the likes of Caelan Doris, Casey, Bundy.
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge. Obviously, Casey being back from his injury is massive. He was so impressive against Scarlett in round one. He just looked to be in unbelievable physical shape, like Crowley. And unfortunately, he got a little bit of a setback, but it's great to have him back. Yeah, and Aki coming on. The only fear I have with the bench, we're going to 5-3 split, but Bundy doesn't really cover a lot of positions. So we just have to hope that we get lucky with that. We don't get exposed there. But the All Blacks bench isn't what it could be either. And I think actually in terms of experience, we certainly hold a better bench there. Ronan Kelleher especially, as you said, Doris coming on, Bundy Aki, Casey to give us tempo, and obviously Finney Beelam as well, who had a brilliant Lions tour. So yeah, hopefully we're still in the game with 20 minutes to go on our bench and come on and help us win it.
What approach are we going to see from Ireland, and where specifically, yeah, where will this be won and lost?
Yeah, Shane, this is the interesting thing. Like, obviously Andy Farr wasn't there for the Six Nations. Obviously Andy Farr was away with the Lions tour. Has he saw things or picked up things from other coaches or other players that he is now going to try and implement into Ireland's way of playing? Ireland have always been a very attack-focused side, ball-in-hand type team under Andy Farrell. Statistics would tell you that's not the way to win Test rugby. And I'm fascinated to see, you know, is Farrell going to adapt? I met him a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that they were benchmarking all the Irish players against the South Africans, the Aussies, and the Kiwis ahead of this November season. But what I'll be fascinated to see is what data told him in terms of what his players need to do to be better and get back to number one in the world, and be winning Six Nations and going to World Cups with momentum. So that we'll have a far better idea of that, not maybe Saturday on its own, but over by the end of this November, having played three of the best teams in the world, I think we'll see where Ireland are going.
And before we let you go, Bernard, it is worth remembering here that these November internationals are extremely important for Rugby World rankings, and it's the last chance to get points before the seeding for the Rugby World Cup. So there is a lot on the line.
Yeah, this is it now. After November, that's when the World Cup draw will be held, and yeah, your seeding is absolutely critical. And again, we have, you know, like if things went really bad, we could lose three out of four in this November, and I don't think we will, but we're far better off getting exposed to the best teams in the world. And Australia now, on the back of that Lions tour and the progress they made in the Rugby Championship, they look like they're back to where they were historically, and that's a good thing for Ireland to know where we're at.
Call it for me. Is it going to be another historic night for Ireland?
I'd hope so, but I'd love if our players had at least one more game under our belt, and I think that will tell. That will tell. But I fancy Ireland to be very competitive, and I wouldn't write it off, but my gut feeling is that New Zealand are just a little bit more battle-hardened.
Okay, great stuff. Listen, Bernard, enjoy Chicago, enjoy the match. Thank you for taking the call this evening. Just before we take a short ad break, some other rugby news. Ireland co-captain Adele McMahon looks set to miss the Women's Six Nations next year after undergoing season-ending knee surgery. The 31-year-old who co-captained Ireland at the recent Rugby World Cup alongside Sam Monaghan will have her second knee surgery since the tournament this weekend. The news was confirmed by her club, Exeter Chiefs, who said McMahon will miss the entire Premiership Women's Rugby and international season. Ireland, of course, begin their Six Nations campaign away to England at Twickenham on April 11th. That is all we have time for from rugby, but we have lots more to come. We have Jeff Shepherd, his eye in America, but up next we have a motorsports special with Alex Denning and David Kennedy. Do not go anywhere.
Game on.
Motorsports.
Now, you're very welcome back to the show, where we have a motorsports special. Now, I am in the company, I'm delighted to say, of superstar Alex Denning, one of the brightest talents in Irish motorsport at the moment, and the legendary David Kennedy. Gentlemen, it is great to have your company. Alex, how's the form? All good?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having us in.
No problem at all. David, how are you, sir?
Lovely to see you. Thank you very much.
It is great to be in the company of the current Lamborghini Super Trofeo Asia Series top man. And the legendary David Kennedy, like, what's the official title at the moment now?
Well, I wouldn't use the term legendary. Maybe survivor.
Sorry, the humble David Kennedy.
Yeah, right, survivor in my business.
I wouldn't go that far. Yeah. but a man of many talents. Listen, a lot to get through. talk to me about the Lamborghini Super Trofeo Asia Series. So it is a bit of a mouthful. So what is the challenge laid out for us, for the listeners who mightn't be familiar with such an event and where you are at the moment? Because as I mentioned, you're top of the pile.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think to explain to all our listeners out there, what is GT racing? So GT racing is sports car racing, your conventional supercars that you'd see. So Audi R8s, Ferrari 296s, McLarens, Porsches, Lamborghinis. It's an alternative route to Formula One. So it's like comparing tennis with badminton, both very similar, but obviously very different as well. Formula One, if you look, you have drivers such as Kevin Magnussen, Max Verstappen recently have started to take up endurance racing, and it's really booming at the moment. I initially dipped my toe in GT racing in 2023 after winning the Motorsport Ireland Young Driver of the Year award. And at the end of my season last year, after a great race in Jeddah, when I was previously with McLaren, David Kennedy gave me a call. We did a test out in Italy earlier in the year. I was the fastest driver at it, and it was a bit of a risk for me and a risk from them. They didn't know how fast I was, and I didn't know how good their package was, but a risk worth taking is what it was in the end. We got 7 out of 10 victories this year, raced all over Asia, were top of the Lamborghini guys, and clinched the title overall in Malaysia. So we've one race left. That's the World Finals, where all the Asian, American and European championships come together next weekend in Misano in Italy. And if we can be top of the pile of all of them, we'll really be doing well.
How confident are you that you will be top of the pile?
Well, I think that's half the battle. If you don't go in thinking that you're the best, you won't be the best. Hopefully you'll be coming home with not only the Asian championship, but the world title.
You've worked with so many drivers across the globe. So how does, now I'm aware he's sitting beside you, but how does someone like Alex compare? And also, what caught your eye initially?
A combination of things, really. Alex has a unique pedigree, that he has a family that's been enormously successful in motorsport. And that's really a good training. You've got to put the miles in. And the family being a regular winner and championship winner in Mondello. So he's always shown the pace. And that's only one aspect of it. For GT racing, you need so many other ingredients. You need intelligence, you need commitment, you need training. And one of the programs that we've logged into for Alex and Charles, our other driver, is that we have a really intense physical training and cognitive training program. And motorsport, because it's got such high finance involved, the standards in terms of sponsorship and fitness and preparation is really of the highest level. And in terms of Alex's performance this year, he's of an Olympian standing. And to be able to take on the best in the world, and Lamborghini have chosen himself and Charles, the top 8 young drivers in the world, to be a part of this Lamborghini shootout. You know, there's 150 global drivers coming to Misano to take part in this. And to have our boys there at the sharp end is a testament to Alex's standard.
From karts in Ireland to GT4s in Europe to Lamborghinis in Asia, why have you gone down that avenue? And like, what's the end goal? What's the vision for yourself?
Yeah, so initially when I was growing up, I always raced as a hobby, and we never really had the vision or the funding to go to Formula One. And it was when I started to get a bit more confidence in my late teens and win Irish championships, go on to win championships in the UK, that was the real turning point of me saying to myself that I could actually make it as a real career. It was trying to balance that with my final year of college was interesting. Especially when we got all those wins in GT4, I said, we can pursue this as a career. And at the moment, being selected for the Lamborghini Young Driver Program and get through to the final 8 to the shootout, that prospect is looking better than ever.
You mentioned your study, so business and economics graduate from Trinity. How have you managed to balance career ambition in the car, the travel, and indeed the financial realities of motorsport? Because you have to focus on performing at an Olympic level, as David kind of has alluded to there, but also you're kind of trying to push and market yourself as well in the world.
Yeah, I think it's just diligence, to be honest. And when you're busiest, you actually find that you structure your time a lot better than when you've nothing to do at all. And that's something I've just learned to do a lot over the last couple of years. Of course, the preparation that goes into it is a hell of a lot. The travelling, the racing itself. And then I need to make a living as well outside of that with driver coaching. So I've done 72 flights this year. It is a real struggle.
I hope you got the air miles racked up.
Oh, yeah, well, Ryanair don't give you much of that. But my, I think just having a routine and a structure, along with some help from, like, the team have done a great job in terms of all the tools they've given us to prepare so that when we get into the car, we've a lot less to do.
Broader picture. How important is a championship like the Lamborghini Super Trofeo in developing drivers ready for GT3 or endurance racing as a whole?
It's really quite unique. I tell you what I particularly love about it. These are these cars, 630 horsepower, way more powerful than a GT3 car. So they're so difficult to drive. It's like wrestling a beast. You know, you have a single seater Formula One car, and the engineering aspect of that would be set up by the engineers, maybe 90% of it. For these cars, it really lends itself to the driver. So Alex will be in charge of 50% possibly of the setup of that car. We'd have our engineers and we'd have our team manager. I'd have an overview on the program. But it's his backside that's in the car and doing a Fred Flintstone with it. So it's an incredibly important learning curve for Alex. Now, when he steps up to, and we really have a career profile that we want to have Alex race in Le Mans and win in Le Mans. And that is the biggest automobile sporting event in the world. It's over 350,000 people. Indianapolis would do 250,000 people. And Lamborghini, if they take Alex on, that is just a golden nugget. It's an enormous opportunity. And he's shown the pace, he's shown the form, and we think he can take it all the way.
Is Le Mans the dream?
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose, like, if you look at Formula One, the sums involved to actually get to the top is somewhere between 7 and 15 million. Le Mans, it's a lot more achievable. And if David paves the way for me, hopefully I can achieve the results to get there.
Is that pave or pay? Yeah. Be very careful.
Purposely misspoken. Yeah. He's just dropping it in there nicely. It's nicely.
I'm holding onto my credit card.
But that thing still has cobwebs on it.
I don't want to get involved. I'll just let you two just working out here. What captures your imagination about Le Mans? What is so special about that event in particular to you?
Well, I think the history of it, looking at, like, you see Ferrari winning it last year with three of their top drivers and them driving down the pit lane with 350,000 people there. It's the pinnacle of motorsports and it's everything that we work towards. David himself, and I'm surprised he hasn't told you yet, was the top Le Mans driver for Mazda in the 90s. I hear it every weekend from him. But in fairness, he was incredibly talented and sought out a very good professional career. So I think the success, the fame, the heritage, and hopefully the paycheck at the end of it is
the dream to be the next David Kennedy. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
you've stolen my question there almost. The following up on that of just how difficult is it competing at Le Mans, and just even kind of outlining again just the prestige of the event.
Yeah, it's something really quite significant, and you're not really aware of it until you've actually been a part of it. And when our team won Le Mans in 1991, it was front page news on every paper across the globe on several accounts. It is the most important thing for an automobile manufacturer to win Le Mans. It shows that you have the endurance, the reliability, the speed. It has got such cachet. And when we won Le Mans, we were taken as drivers to Hiroshima and we were taken around in a Popemobile against, you know, the staff there, hundreds of thousands, to the city. It was simply phenomenal. And Lamborghini, in their situation at the moment, they're a growing mark. They're building a program. And to be a part of that, the tide is rising. So a lot could happen there. But in terms of prestige, it doesn't get better from a manufacturer's point of view. And then from a driver, if you've got a cachet of winning Le Mans, that's a golden ticket. You've just won the gold in the Olympics.
But the margins in the current championship, and I know we're kind of talking about the pathway to that ultimately, but they're so, so tight. Like, even take me back to that final weekend. I said you're top of the pile at the moment and hopefully it does go well now in the grand final. But just how difficult is it? And what's the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome even in recent times?
Going to your first point of the of how tight the margins are. The track we're going to Misano next weekend, I raced there last year, qualified on P3, and the top six cars in qualifying were separated between 6/1000ths of a second. And that's roughly about 6 inches at that speed. So, yeah, like everything you do, that's over 2 minutes and that's 6/1000ths of a second. So it's just so, so, so fine, the margins. And sorry, I missed your second question.
No, just even I was even kind of saying, if you're talking about those small margins, it's like, what's been the biggest challenge when you're talking about something, when you're putting it into that context, it's wild. If there's any casual listeners to motorsport thinking, when you're really laying out it in that manner, just how difficult it has been for you and what's been the most challenging aspect of getting to the top?
I would say, like, obviously the preparation is very important, but I would say the mental aspect of it is very, very crucial when you're talking about them finest last couple of tenths. And I've seen it over the years with very talented drivers when they come to the situation where they have to perform, that they lose their head. So I think it's a mix in between that and taking that extra little bit of risk, because you have to remember these cars are going at 290 kilometres an hour. Any little split second mistake you can make can be detrimental to both, not only your race, but to your career. So it's the precision, the mental capacity, and I think taking that extra little bit of risk.
How difficult is the mental capacity aspect? Because you're in your mid-20s and having to consume all of that. Like, is there ever a moment where you feel even burnt out, even at this early stage? Or is it just, no, I'm loving it, every second of it?
Yeah, you definitely do at times. But I think, like, over time with the amount of, like, this year is, and David will tell you himself, it's one in a million. You rarely, rarely ever get a race. Like, 7 wins in 3 seconds with no reliability issues, no mistakes from our end. It rarely happens. And I had 2 seasons of lots of bad luck. And I think over time you just build up resilience. It's a sport of few highs but many, many lows. Mm. And in those lows you build up a very big mental resilience that when the pressure comes on and it comes down to the nitty gritty, that you can really just pull it out of the bag and perform.
I know you spoke about catching the eye of Lamborghini and that's an avenue, but how do you help a driver make that leap from GT4 or Trofeo level competition up to GT3 or even that World Endurance Championship?
It is a combination. There's several moving factors here. First of all, there's the driver himself, that his preparation, his dedication, how professional he is. And to give you an example, we finished second in this championship last year and I needed something special to make the difference. And sitting opposite me is the man that made the difference. He just made it that little bit better. And I can tell you now, if he went back to his McLaren days, the fitter and the sharper driver is now, he would have had pole position. You would have found that 6,000th of a second, because he's a faster, better prepared driver. The cognitive training has brought him to another level. So that's one element. The second element is our team. And our team have got to produce the best car. We got to look good. We got to sound good. We got to present good. And we've done that on every level, if I say so, because the results have brought that home. And now we've engaged with the top level at Lamborghini, and that's why Alex has got the opportunity to be one of their junior drivers. And then with that, the momentum builds up to take on the next program.
I can already see it in front of me, but how beneficial is it having a man like this beside you to lean on and pick his brain?
Oh, very beneficial. Like, I think everything that he's just discussed throughout the year has been very beneficial, and I've learned a lot. He can be a bit stubborn in his ways and 40 years in the past sometimes, but
and you're dusting off the credit card as well, don't forget.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, no chance I get to that excuse, my friend.
Now, I'll show you how stubborn he is. I'm going to cut in here. Just to give you an example, there's 2 drivers in the operation, and one of the drivers was giving out to me. I was telling him a mistake that he made and how he needed to improve. Well, he got up and he slammed the door and he said, "You don't know how things are today." So I sort of rubbing my chin. Has Newton's laws of gravity changed? Has Copernicus's rules different? Yes. It's the same bloody thing. You know, I've been in the trenches a million years. You're not going to tell me what's required. I can tell you because I've been there. I've done it. I know how to do it. And so he changed his attitude. He's a much more positive player. The great thing about Alex is because he's got that mileage under his belt and he's had a tough time, he absorbs it, he listens and he learns.
How healthy is Irish motorsport right now, and do we have the structures in place to develop more international level drivers, do you feel?
Yeah, there's two clear lines on this. We have a governing body, Motorsport Ireland, led by Arthur Collier and John Naylor, and they put a great programme together. And Alex has been a recipient of that to get the bonus and the award for the Young Driver of the Year. And that was a catalyst to bring him up to an international stage. The second aspect of that is Mondello Park. It's a circuit that has corners that the drivers don't want, but the corners that the drivers need. And anyone who's been successful in Mondello, and I've seen it time and time again, they've been able to go to Nürburgring, able to go to Silverstone, able to go to Brands Hatch, and they're easy because it's such a difficult circuit. You've got adverse cambers that tighten up, the tarmac at them changes from one aspect to the other. So it's just the fabulous university for drivers.
David touched on it there, Alex. Like, even when you're kind of come up through that Motorsport Ireland pathway, and I mentioned you were young driver of the year as well, how much support did that provide you, and is there any even areas of improvement that you've even learned that might benefit other drivers coming through the ranks now?
Yeah, I don't think it's not even just the financial support, it's the backing that gives you not only in your confidence but the other sponsors and partners around you from a commercial aspect, that belief and that financial support to bring you to the next step. Touching on the Irish involvement in motorsport, I think a general rise in the interest and appetite for Formula One, motorsports in general, Drive to Survive, I think it's great for our country. I think we're probably a little bit behind Britain in terms of our level of drivers, but I think that benefits the few that have excelled. There's three or four of us. There's myself, Max Hart, Alex Dunn, Fionn McLaughlin, who are all going in a very good direction. But I think it's actually a big beneficial factor being just one of four who are on the international stage at the moment.
Would you keep in contact? Is there like a Motorsport Ireland WhatsApp group on the go here where you're picking brains off each other?
Well, I'm in business with a driver academy mentoring younger drivers coming up with Max Hart, good friend of mine, would be in contact with him every day. Fionn McLaughlin, just after winning the British F4 Championship, also the next hot shot in Ireland, and then Alex Dunn, who's done a great job in F2 this year. So yeah, would definitely, and I think that's the great thing about such a small country is we all know each other.
Do you enjoy the coaching aspect of it, even though you're only what, 26, is it? Like, yeah. Even kind of you're already giving back to the sport, even though you're on that upward curve.
Definitely, I think it's one of the most rewarding jobs is seeing that your impact on someone is making them faster over a lap, and it's judging the person and having an understanding of how much information they can take on, adapting your coaching towards them. And if they listen, it's a very rewarding job.
51552 is the text number. Game on. Wonderful to hear David Kennedy on the show. Brings back wonderful memories of F1 coverage in RT with Peter Collins all those years ago. On F1, David, given your history in the sport and your current role in global motorsport, how do you view the current F1 landscape? And is it more difficult for young drivers breaking through now than when you were involved, or where do you see it?
The bar has gone up exponentially in terms of the cost for a driver to get there. To give you an example, it's €1 million a day for Formula One. Now, you go out and find that. it's not under every curbstone you're going to find it.
It might be in Dave's credit card.
I feel there's a drinking game somewhere where you're just taking off about the dimensions here.
But having said that, I think Ireland has been, it really, for population, has been incredibly well represented. And we've got to go back to Eddie Jordan and look at how he got the ball rolling and really brought it home to Ireland. Look, you can do it. You can do it as a team. And to give Eddie Irvine the chance, and Eddie made his way. We had a fabulous young Irish driver, Tommy Byrne. He had his opportunity through Eddie Jordan as well. And there's a great book out called Crashed and Burn. So I give it to my driver to tell him what not to do. And then you had Martin Donnelly, which is this incredible movie that was made in Formula One that has 600 million people. It's phenomenal in terms of the publicity and the value. It is tougher, though. It is tougher. And breaking the mold currently is another Alex, and as Alex Denning alluded to, Alex Dunn is just at the cusp of that. And and he's had to, you know, just not quite break into banks to be able to get there. But
does he have the talent?
Oh yes, yeah. We sponsored him in Macau last year, and Macau is the benchmark for the young drivers coming through, and he was outstanding. I mean, I've had Charles Leclerc, Ferrari driver. There are six F1 drivers currently on the grid that have driven for us, and Alex can do it.
Mm. That's brilliant to see. So much bright talent, even the names you're reading off there, Alex, and hopefully he does make the breakthrough. Do you keep an eye on F1? I assume if you're into motorsport, you're into all forms of motorsport.
Yeah, definitely. But I think there's so many moving parts to Formula One. Everyone claims to be an expert on it. There's just so much to it nowadays. Lewis Hamilton is definitely my favourite driver. But yeah, the long...
Who are we tipping for the championship then? I'll go to David first if you need to think about it.
Well, it's a fabulous run-off between the two McLaren drivers, and it's just to see Verstappen being able to chase them and come back at them. You know, it's in a way, it's like the old fox and the young pup. And to some degree, I'd love to see Max give the guys a real hard time. What I prefer to see is just great motor racing.
Okay, that's a very neutral answer. That's very that's a very politically savvy answer there.
Yeah, that's a politician's answer. I think it's going to be Norris.
Okay. straight in. That's why you have that determination, that motor driver seat. Listen, before we wrap up, Declan Quigley was on with us, paying tribute to the late Eddie Jordan not too long ago as well, and he was kind of rolling back the years to the time when RT were covering motorsport with Peter Collins and Declan Quigley, and the access Eddie Jordan gave everyone and the character he was. What springs to mind, kind of even looking back on the working days? I know you achieved so much in your success as a driver and as an owner, as a boss, but just kind of working in those environments?
Well, Eddie brought a spotlight to not just the sport, but also to Ireland. It was his character, his charisma, his ability to kick down doors and ad lib it. And we all went along with that. You know, I don't think he would have made it in Ireland. He just needed to go abroad and be able to work his magic there. And the legacy that he left was a lot of the people are still in the sport. And when we won the World Cup in A1 for Team Ireland, we had Gary Anderson, we had Mark Gallagher, we had all of that Irish fraternity. And now there's an opportunity for lots of drivers coming through because there is an Irish history there. And for that, we're thankful to Eddie Jordan.
Well, listen, long may it continue. David Kenny, thank you so much. You are a legend. I know you won't want to admit it yourself, but you are a legend of the sport. Alex Denning, you're an up-and-coming legend, and I wish you all the best. Hopefully it goes well next week and you continue on the upward trajectory, and we'll be chatting to you live from Le Mans one day, put it that way. Okay.
You're invited.
I'll take you up on it. Alex Denning,
thank you very much. And to all our listeners, keep an eye out on my social media for next weekend for the World Finals. Next Thursday to Sunday, and hopefully we'll be bringing home the World Championship to Ireland.
Here's hoping. Where can we find you? What's the social media handles?
AlexDenning33 on Instagram.
Brilliant. Great stuff. David, cheers. Alex, thank you for taking the short ad break. Jeff Shepherd is up next with his Eye on America.
Game on. Eye on America. The RTE Radio app.
Now, you're very welcome back to the show. Jeff Shepherd is on the line with our Eye on America. Shep, let us begin chatting about the NFL. And don't worry, I'm not going to begin by championing the Jets, who got their first win of the season. And isn't it brilliant? It's all rosy. Here we go, unbeaten season from now. Let us be serious and unbiased and impartial and talk to me about a couple of second-year stars who are expected to play this week after missing several games with injuries.
Yeah, so, you know, Jaden Daniels, the quarterback of the Commanders, he missed some time earlier in the season, and he missed last Monday night's game against the Kansas City Chiefs dealing with a knee injury. He is expected to be back this week when they take on the Seattle Seahawks. Look, you know, Shane, everything possibly that could go right for the Commanders last season went right for the Commanders last season. And everything that could go wrong for them is pretty much gone wrong for them this year. It's kind of like, you know, the odds just evening things out. But they're going to get him back and, you know, hopefully kind of try to start turning things around in a positive light. But the Seahawks are a good football team. They're very much alive for a playoff spot in the NFC. And then over in the AFC, you've got the tight end Brock Bowers. He's missed three games for the Raiders. He's coming back. They have really, really struggled without him out on the field. Geno Smith has just been more down than up here the last month or so. And they're going to come back. He's going to come back this week and add much needed pep to that offense. So it's good to see the young guys getting back out onto the field.
Okay, there are a couple of individuals that will be back, but probably a lot of the focus this weekend is going to be Chiefs. They're at Buffalo Sunday afternoon, and we have potentially a game of the year in the making here.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we talk about this every year, right, Shane? You know, whether Buffalo is going to Kansas City, Kansas City's going back to Buffalo. You know, whoever kind of comes and gets hot, and then maybe they fall off. But the Chiefs and the Bills have just been the constants here the last couple of seasons. Look, we've talked about it several times on this show. The Chiefs slow out of the gate with their offense, but they have added their weapons. They've gotten Rashee Rice back. They've got Xavier Worthy. They could be looking to make a move here before the trade deadline, which is next week. And they've been playing really well. I mean, they really didn't have any problems Monday night with the Commanders. And then you've got the Bills, who've struggled here lately in the last couple of games. Absolutely blew out the Panthers last weekend, but were struggling before that. But again, I mean, you know, when you get to these head-to-head matchups, Shane, with these two teams, I mean, you're talking number one overall, you know, in the playoffs and the number one seed. So you're talking about whether you have to go to Kansas City in freezing weather in January, or you have to go to Buffalo in freezing weather in January. I mean, neither one of them sound like too appealing, but you know, you're guaranteed to get snow in Buffalo. So, I mean, Mahomes, Allen, two best quarterbacks in the league, your leading MVP candidates, all of that stuff. I mean, it's got the makings of great television Sunday afternoon.
It absolutely does. Listen, Shep, the trade deadline is next Tuesday, so there will be different narratives to explore this weekend as well, I'm right in saying?
Yeah, so you have to think, like, okay, who's going to take a shot? And see, like we just mentioned, the Chiefs and your Jets. Okay, let's just go ahead and admit it. Your Jets, my Saints, probably not going to make the playoffs this year, okay? So do you want to go ahead and unload some players and get some future draft picks to start your rebuild and kind of kickstart your rebuild? Well, Breece Hall is a name that could potentially, you know, be on the trading block for the Jets. And the Chiefs need a running back, and they need a good, consistent running back who can play every down, somebody like Breece Hall. So that's a name, somebody you would want to look at. The Saints have got a couple of wide receivers that they're potentially thinking about moving. But it's who's on the cusp of making a playoff run, and they want to – maybe they feel like they're missing one piece or something like that, and they want to go ahead and make a move for someone. So the trade deadline is next Tuesday. So, you know, after the action wraps up this week – it's not going to be, you know, just a quiet weekend in the front office for these teams. They're going to be looking their hands over and figuring out, are we going to try to make a run this year? Or are we going to maybe, you know, fold up shop and start looking to the future?
Okay. From football to baseball, the Toronto Blue Jays dominated the LA Dodgers, and they have moved to within one win from their first World Series in 32 years.
Look, Shane, I mean, we've spoken so much about Ohtani and the Dodgers and this roster and the $1 billion of signings that they did just with the two players in the offseason. And they're on the brink of elimination. Their bats have gone cold. The Blue Jay pitching has been fantastic. Look, game four went 18 innings the other night. You know, I mean, it was like a 6.5 hour baseball game. And if they don't hit a home run and win that game, they could have been eliminated by now. The Blue Jays have just been playing phenomenally. They got a 12 strikeout performance by a rookie last night. So look, to your point, it's been 30 years since they've been there. And they will look to close things out in game six, Halloween night up in Canada.
How difficult was it, just before we do wrap up, kind of moving past the agony of an 18-inning loss to guarantee then a game six? And like even powering through the physical demands of that.
Well, 100%, Shane, because look, the way the schedule worked out this year, I mean, they basically played games 3, 4, and 5 back to back to back this week. So there was no rest. There was no off day in between that 18-inning game. Yeah, they were back at the stadium like, you know, 10 hours later getting ready to play game five. So, yes, I mean, physically incredibly demanding on both of the teams. They get a day off for travel and maybe get a little rest. Hopefully they can come back, you know, at full speed when they get back to Toronto to play game six.
Okay, great stuff. Jeff Shepherd, we will leave it there for now. Just briefly to League of Ireland news and a disaster for Dundalk, because there are reports in the Irish Examiner that Kieran Kilduff has reportedly quit as Dundalk manager less than 3 weeks after securing the club's return to the Premier Division. Dundalk have yet to officially confirm Kilduff's departure, but it doesn't look great for the Dundalk club. That is all we have time for this evening. Thank you for tuning into Game On. We return tomorrow, 6 o'clock here in 2FM, but do not go anywhere now, because up next is the new music show with Beda Da Silva. Today's Game On was produced by Gary Moran, and our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. So for me, Shane Dawson, and all of the team, it's bye for now.
This is 2FM.